Okay. Let's turn to the next speaker. So my name is Rolf Pfeiffer. I'm one of the co-chairs of the conference. I have the great pleasure and honor of introducing the last speaker before the poster session tonight, Gábor Prózeki. We have heard from Arthur Eckert how difficult it is to make predictions, and that reminded me of a quote by the physicist Niels Bohr, who said, "It's hard to predict, especially the future." So the field that Gábor has been working in is also full of, I think, false predictions, you know, speech language technology of false predictions. But I'm sure he will, you know, come up with some predictions that will indeed materialize. So he is, by training, he's a linguist and software engineer. He has a PhD in computational linguistics. In 2005, he was awarded the Doctor of the Hungarian Academy of Science. In 1991, together with colleagues from software engineering, he founded a company, MorphoLogic, which was the first industrial-oriented language company in Hungary. Many applications that the company has developed have in the meantime been licensed by companies like Microsoft, IBM, Xerox, and others. He is also the CEO of MorphoLogic. In 1999, the company MorphoLogic was awarded the IST Prize of the European Commission. In 2000, he was awarded the Széchenyi Prize, which is the most prestigious award in Hungary, the Kalmar Award of the John von Neumann Society, the Denis Gábor Award, and many, many more. Today, he will talk about that. Hopefully, we don't have the projection yet, maybe. So today, he will talk about the hopefully near future of human language technologies. So Gábor, we're all looking forward to your presentation. So the floor is yours as soon as we can get the projection working.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction. I just add two small things to the institutions here. The university I belong to is the oldest Hungarian university, and the IT faculty is the newest IT faculty among the IT faculties in Hungary. And it's very important that not only general IT is taught in this faculty, but basically human-oriented or human-centered IT, biotechnology and so on, and somewhere language technology, what is the topic of my talk, is touched here. And MorphoLogic, as you could hear, it's a celebration to me. It's exactly 20 years ago we established the company in 1991 May, so it is my pleasure to be here on this occasion. First, I have to tell you some words about human language technologies, because a journalist came to me a few days ago concerning the presentation on this conference, and first he told me that he would have some questions. First, what is it? What is this language technology about? So it's very difficult to explain the details, but it's a branch of information science where computer and languages meet, spoken language or written language. Of course, we try to gather, manipulate, store, retrieve, whatever, a lot of activity are known in natural language information. And of course, we, the society of language technology people, are able to support computer users with the help of our existing applications. And the problem is that these applications are good enough, but the question is whether they can be better or not, and this is the topic of my talk here. So because the aims of this human language technology society is that the intelligent treatment, storage, processing of language-based information. So it's more or less everything is language, but of course, if you go to the internet, there are videos, of course, pictures, some music, but the rest is written in a human language. And the problem is that those languages differ. Of course, most, the bulk of the information is in English, but there are many other languages, like Chinese, even Hungarian. So that's another problem, that there is a language diversity. So there are general methods, but those general methods are good on a general level, but very specifically, there is a concrete language we have to be have to work with. And this is a big problem because the languages are different. And this is a technology where not the characters after another count, but the information which is encoded in language itself. And we would like to maintain this language-based information because somehow this digital age is coming, or it's here, and a lot of information, almost the biggest part of the human knowledge is written in a written form, and those written forms are in form of languages. It's encoded in form of languages. And there is a new challenge, the ambient intelligence systems, because language is used normally in communication everywhere. And if we are somewhere, for example, if someone asked me where is the Eiffel Tower here, I would say in France. If you are in France, you would say in Paris. In Paris, you say that the next corner left. And if you are before the tower, someone asks you behind you. So this is always a very important human knowledge, which is indirectly connected to the language ability of humans. And not much is described by linguists on this area. So there are a lot of open questions because linguists are only just in a few last few years computational linguists. Earlier they were just traditional linguists, and a lot of new questions arise in our age. And of course, not two humans can communicate in our age, but you can communicate to the computer, so the man-machine communication. And of course, you have expectations based on relying on your existing experience, because the other human so far has been able to reply your questions, and the computer should play the same role, but it's very difficult to say that this is just a computer, sorry, it is not able to do what the humans do. So we would like to copy how the humans communicate to each other, and then the machine will try to play the role of the partner of in communication. Of course, as every coin, there's two sides, the speech and language, and for humans, speech is the original form of using languages, and the written form is just a secondary form. But in case of computers, everything is series of characters. So the written form is somehow the mother tongue of the computer, and even the speech signal is transformed into digital forms which come after another. So somehow the difference between the human communication and the machine communication is hidden here, that these in this difference. Just to mention some very important and hopefully well-known fields of language technology. So text can be classified. Of course, text can be classified without linguistic knowledge, but there are many, many situations where it's not enough to refer to the characters after another, but somehow the message helps you to classify a text. For example, if you go to a bookshop, and you just open a book and you are able to decide whether you like this book or not because you just see some information in it. It's very difficult to tell the computer how to do it, that it's a good book or it's suitable to my needs and so on. There's information extraction, which is a very simple task because there are much more information what we are able to read at all, because just a single message can go to millions of people and not all of them are able to read all the messages. Just remember how many of the messages are deleted without reading it. So it is a very important thing that minimize and the essence of the information, the most salient part of the information should be given instead of reading a huge presentation, huge paper from the beginning to the end. Text understanding, where understanding is a bit misleading term because it's not really, the text is not understood by the computer, but at least it reacts like someone who understood the information, and only the computers up to now have been only able to reply to questions which were in the text, and the text understanding means that some connection between the different parts of text are understood by the computer and it's able to reply to questions which are not directly written in the text. Or text mining, where even the relation among various parts of a text is not clear and the computer is able to find connections and tries to help you to see what is hidden in a text. The other block is the bi- and multilingual word, the machine-assisted translation. Machine-assisted, it's very important here, the assistance, because it's not just, as it, the next one is machine translation, it's not a machine which translates in case of machine-assisted translation, but it's a human. But let's make this human as fast and as effective as possible. It's very important that the human is able to do what a human is able to do, but the computer can accelerate this process. Machine translation, it is the most known product of language technology, and because the quality of a general machine translation system, you can hear about it in my presentation, is not as good as expected. Therefore, machine translation plays a strange role in our world because we would like to solve the problem, but the problem cannot be solved on the level which is expected by many humans, and therefore they think that the full language technology business means nothing because machine translation is not available. Of course, we are very strange. I mean, we humans, that if we meet another person who has some problem, doesn't speak the language well, a child, an old man, a sick person, a drunken person, a foreigner, and we are somehow tolerant to that person, and we try to understand, even if he is not able to formalize perfectly the information in our mother tongue, let's say, but we are not tolerant to the computer. So we expect a perfect solution, and if it is not, we don't like it. A PhD student of mine is studying this problem, that people understand many, many machine-translated texts, but they are not willing to say that they really understood it. Just they say that, I don't like it. Of course, the questions referring to the content of the text show that people understand the text, but they don't like this feeling because it's totally different. All the errors in a machine-translated text are different from the people's errors, and that's what we don't really tolerate. And there are search problems where we would like to find all those strings, as you usually do, I don't know how many times, in Google and other search engines, but it's very easy to find 2, 3, 7, 26 characters after another, but if you don't want to find a string of characters, but you would like to understand the text with the help of, how to say, so you would like to find a concept which can be represented linguistically in different ways, and so on. And there are, for example, report generations, so there is a computer text, and somehow it should be a human text out of it. For example, weather reports, automatical weather reports. People understand weather reports which were transformed from computer data without human interaction very well. So it is a very narrow word, and people accept this. But because in machine translation and other applications are free for everyone, therefore there is a big freedom. And the computer is not as intelligent as we are, but in case of a weather report, you don't expect intelligence, just you would like to see or read all those linguistic forms, what are normally the weather reports use. And therefore, and as I mentioned, there are speech systems, so we nowadays, we are able to recognize speech and write it into a textual format, or texts are spoken by computers, even by your cars, and many, many applications are available today. And the dialogue systems are another very important theme, but it's a very difficult thing because dialogue normally is not two perfect texts are on the left and the right side, but people, when use the older rules of the dialogues, they can hesitate, stop, cough, whatever, and therefore the word of non-full linguistic utterances are very, very difficult to describe because, as I mentioned, our linguists are able to describe the existing well-formed sentences or utterances, and this is a word where almost none of the information is well-formed. So the key problem is that we need a model for describing language, but somehow this is a formal model. It's been So since Chomsky's famous book in 57, The Syntactic Structure, so we know that there is a formalism, a frame, and we describe human languages. Somehow we describe human languages for another human. And it's very, very important here. So the other human is able to understand us without going into the details. It is totally different in the case of computers. So we are able to wink to each other with another human, but it cannot be done with a computer, not just because physically it's very difficult to imagine a computer which is winking, but because why and how and what, because I know that what you know and you understand me and so on, and this is the typical information in dictionaries or language descriptions for students in the school or for foreigners to learn a language. We always expect that the other one is a human being. And it's the first case in history when a computer tries to replace the other human, and a lot of additional information should be said. So for example, if you just take a child of 2 years and a 2-year-old child who has heard thousands of times, for example, that sit down, and this sit down has never occurred when he or she was sitting. And he or she was able to understand that it's a situation when I don't sit and I have to sit after that. It's an information which is somehow connect us to the outer world. And in this very interesting linguistic world where we try to separate the outer world from the language, following Chomsky, it doesn't allow us to write perfectly this relation between the world and our linguistic information. So therefore, computers are in a totally different situation than humans. So it is our big task to describe language for the computer, and the school grammars cannot be used because we have to reformalize the old rules in order to the computer understand it. So for example, it's a well-known thing that there are texts which we are able to understand. For example, you can read it. For those who don't, I just put it here, but it's a well-known situation that if you leave the first and the last character of a word besides the white spaces and the rest you shuffle, it's quite understandable. And it's not just a spelling problem for a computer, but it is able to do nothing with this text. And it's a very simple thing. Of course, normally we don't produce text like this, but it is a problem that we don't read the characters after another, but we knew the gestalt, as the psychologists say, the whole form. And it's just one example, but I can list a lot of examples, but it's just a limited time for me, so I go on. So the question is that can the machine find out what the linguist knows? Because the linguist knows a lot of things and tries to put this knowledge into a grammar, and how the machines relate to it. So linguists are always speaking and writing about principles, and those principles are very nice to know about, but those principles are difficult to understand for a computer because, as I mentioned, it doesn't have the background what the human beings have. And this is another new idea in the last decade, that if we realize that all those spoken and written materials available on the web, on your network, and so on, therefore everything is available in the original form, the texts, the spoken text, written text, and why do we work with the linguistic principles? It's so difficult to formalize. Just try to put the original text to the computer, and let's see whether it's able to understand or at least learn out of it or not. And this is the consequence that we try to omit linguists. In the new trend is that there are a lot of new methods, machine learning and so on. So let's feed the computer with the text themselves and let's omit the linguists who have those very strange principles and it's very difficult to transform into the language of computers. But if the computers meet the same text what the linguists normally meet, perhaps they can learn what is needed for a computer, and we don't need to make problems out of the very complex linguistic rules. It is statistics. Statistical approaches arrived to computational linguistics, mostly the noisy channel model and the naive Bayes theorem. It's very simple things. It's programmed by a lot of people, and it's first been used in speech understanding. And a few years later, someone realized that not just the speech and the text can be combined, but two separate texts, text written in language A, text written in language B, and what is in between the two, the noisy channel. But somehow this can be translated into the other one, and we just need what we need. We need a huge amount of paired input and output, so by text. Here is the original text, here is the translation, original translation. And just feed the computer with these pairs, and it's a very simple thing, this Bayes theorem, which is programmed, and you can download, even any of you, go home and download the most contemporary statistical tools, open source. So it raises the question whether we are ready, because if there is text enough, you have the tool, what else? The problem comes here, because the applications based on the same tool differ. For example, Google Translator is different from the one what you are planning to do it at home tonight after my recommendation. You just go there. Why? There are two reasons. One is the quantity of data. What you have is much less than, for example, the company I mentioned previously have. Or, and, there are a lot of parameters. So it is like saying that there is a piano outside. So if you are not able to play the piano, but you can try it, because just the parameters are different. You don't know how to use your left hand, right hand, but the sounds are given, because if you just go there, the piano will give you a perfect sound if it is well-tuned. But this parameterizing is a very difficult task, so to know how to and what to do with the piano is not easy, but it's open to anyone. And, of course, the quantity of data, which makes the word very strange, because if you have not enough data, this is the typical sparse data problem, it's critical, and you can never have enough data. In a language, let's say English, which is mostly represented in the internet, and in case of translation, you need another language, so English and another language, and you try to find pairs of English and, let's say, German, Spanish, Chinese, or even Hungarian text. These pairs you can collect, but they don't cover the whole language, just a part of the language. And there are languages, for example, we just try to imagine that translation from Bulgarian into Maltese. It's a very difficult task, as difficult as English-Chinese, but English-Chinese tools work quite well, because the word tries to solve that problem and doesn't support those Maltese and Bulgarian computational linguists with data enough. So therefore, the data is language-dependent, and on the other hand, because the more data is the better solution, if you are in a narrower topic, you don't have data enough. If you would like to translate medical text, there are much less medical text even in English than, for example, general text on the web. General text means that your tool will be good for everything. In fact, it's good for nothing. And if you would like to narrow the topic, your tool will be better and better, but you lose customers. And it's not science, but it's economy. So just a very short sketch how these statistical system work. There are two very important things in them. For example, it's just a picture on Spanish-English translation. If you would like to translate from Spanish into English, you have to have a lot of English-Spanish by text. And of course, Spanish translation is not translating the text, but translating, let's first the sentence, and the sentence is not translated as such, but only words, pairs of words, triad of words, four words, n-grams. And those n-grams can be paired with the output's potential 1, 2, 3 n-grams, so it's a lot of information here, and of course only just a few of the translation-like attempts are real translations, so in the middle you see a lot of potential translations where these Spanish words and pairs and three and four words could be found, and this is the conditional probability part of the Bayes theorem. So you have two languages, and the question is whether what is the probability that if you have Spanish text here, the English text was the original text where it was translated from. And there is another element in this system, which is a single monolingual system. It is always about the target language. The target language means that in the target language, what is usually said or written. So in case of English, in our case, English is the target language. The target language means that I try to choose the best one out of the many potential translations, which are mostly said in English, of course, against statistics. And the conditional part of the Bayes theorem called translation model, because there are two languages concerned, and there is the language model where the target language is given, and there is a tool, the coding algorithm, which tries to combine, which tries to make something out of it. The biggest probability where both the translation is good enough and the output is English-like enough. So this is the very simple idea. And it's not just translation. Of course, Spanish and English are different. But there are many other applications where the two languages are used, but it's not obligatory that the two languages should be really two different languages. For example, an output of a translation, which is not good, and a lot of humans post-process those texts, and there they correct it. And therefore, the output is a different text. So there is the original English output and the corrected English output, and it can be fed by the computer, and therefore here two Englishes can play the role of target language and source language. So it's a lot of possibility or unanalyzed input, analyzed input. So it's in fashion that statistical systems work everywhere. Why? Because it's very cheap. You don't need to understand the language. You need to understand the naive Bayes theorem, and you have to collect a lot of text, which can be collected, but without real linguistic knowledge. But the consequence of it is that there is a so-called business model crisis in this language technology world, because it's very easy to come out with a statistical system. You just put it on the web, and all those other old-fashioned rule-based systems can compete with it. But in all those old-fashioned systems, you find hundreds and hundreds of man years work. And of course, they are a bit better than those statistical systems. But these statistical systems are very easy to produce. And therefore, more and more end users use these free services. And less money remains for those developments where the developers would like to get some money out of the production. So it is a very interesting situation that all those rule-based systems, which are slightly better, but their development needs much more money because linguists should be employed and so on, and therefore they are going out of the picture, and only the statistical systems remain, where the baseline method is quite high. So it is a very typical phenomenon today in language technology. It's very easy to do something which is not bad. Not bad, you can interpret yourself for yourself as you like. Not bad means that it can be put on the web. And all those very clever scholars who work on academic methods and so on can improve these results by 10, 15%. The problem is that if the baseline is 60%, and 60% is not too good, but good enough for a free system, because if you would like to complain, there is no one who you complain because it's for free. And if there is another system which is 70% good, goodness is a very relative term, but it means just 10% more than 60. Why to pay for that 10% if it was 100? But today we are not able to produce 100% perfect translations, let's say, and 60 is available for free. So it is very interesting that end users don't want to pay, someone should pay, because we would like to continue the development. And the real good scientific results remain in labs, because no one would like to pay for that. So it's very difficult to say what is the state of the art in language technology, for example, in machine translation, because the machine translation baseline systems you know about, and you don't know what are the in the labs, which are not yet mature enough to show that they are much, much better than those baseline systems. So because there is, as I mentioned, there are not enough data in specific languages, Bulgarian or Maltese, I mentioned. There are not enough data in special subfields, technical word or and so on. The narrower the topic, the less the data. And because the less spoken languages, low quality, so there are not much more Maltese text available all over the world than is available by Google. And who will improve this? In the European Union, we know that all the languages are equal, but in fact, there are much more English text, and we can rely our technology on those texts, and Maltese is an unfortunate language in that sense. And the domain-specific applications are, again, there are enough data for developing general tools. They are on the web. The specific applications, no one is brave enough to show that our technology is much better than yours if you narrow the topic, because the topic narrowing means that you lose market. And everyone wants to convince the full society of internet and not just a very very small part of it. So this is in a narrow text, in a narrow topic that less ambiguities are, and it is a typical sub-language where the terms are non-ambiguous, there are terminus technicus, and so on. So it is in the air that somehow we have to hybridize. The rule-based systems have their benefits. And of course, you could understand that these statistical systems are good enough because they are very easy to develop. So somehow we have to combine the two paradigms. But just let me shortly show you the history of language technology or computational linguistics in the original name, maiden name of language technologies, computational linguistics. In the 1950s, when the computers appeared, there was a Cold War, and mostly the United States wanted to translate a lot of English text into Russian and Chinese, or back, from Russian and from Chinese into English. And there were a lot of promises in the air that just it's an encoding, decoding problem. After the Second World War, we are able to do it in very fast. We'll be ready soon. Only, okay, some morphology we will add, but it's ready. Okay, some syntax, but really just a few years, some semantics, and so on. And after a while, in 1966, the very famous ALPAC report, the ALPAC is an acronym, the Automatic Language Processing Advisory Committee, they said, stop. The fully automatic machine translation is just a dream. Stop, because a lot of money was spent for that. Nothing more. I can't imagine a similar report in other sciences, but here in language technology at that time, machine translation, that stop was the birth of computational linguistics, because a lot of guys who worked with language and computer, and up to that point it was called machine translation. From this point it had a new name, computational linguistics, and it is the basis of our natural language processing or language technology. So it was a very important byproduct that machine translation stopped, but a lot of other applications I just shown on the first slide were born. Today, it's the European Union instead of the United States. There is no Cold War at all, but there are more and more official languages. And the Union, the Commission, is eager to have a fantastic system which is able to translate from all the languages into all the other languages. And the solution is not relying on rules, as in case of the 50s, but statistics. We'll be ready soon. The basic statistical method is enough. Okay, some morphology we add, but really. But okay, some syntax. Okay, some semantics, but really, it's just a few years from now. And the problem is that after this, we have a feeling that this situation is very, very similar to the 1966 situation, because there is a big hope that in the near future we have a fantastic machine translation tool, and it's coming, but not what we really expected. And I don't know whether it's really similar, the two situations, but somehow we have to compare the two paradigms and we can find out what is the output. So this is a lot of language technology problems can be modeled by rules and statistics. Rule-based methods are more expensive, statistical are more available, language independent, if this term exists, cheaper, and so on. So there are languages where we can't solve the problem. Even the simplest language technology does in a language where there are a lot of suffixes. Perhaps you who has never wanted to learn Hungarian, but here you met very long Hungarian words in between two spaces because of the many suffixes coming after another in a word. And if you just imagine that the same size of English and Hungarian corpora, try to compare. In the English corpus, you can count how many times, for example, table occurs in a text. But in the Hungarian corpus, table is always inflected. So therefore, table in nominative occurs only just a few times, but many, many other constructions occur in the same text. So therefore, we need magnitudes more text in order to have the same statistics, what can be done with the help of a normal English text. So there are languages where there are problems. But what is interesting, these are the very famous thing, and just a short remark, because many people tend to think that it's due to Hegel, but it's Fichte who said this, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So this is where we are going toward. So synthesis is the future where these two systems work together somehow. But the question is that how and why that way what we recommend or offer. So why? Why? Because it's very interesting that psycholinguistic researchers say that we humans process everything with the help of two systems. So both methods are present in the human language processing. So it's not just a computer or a language technology person's dream that let's combine the two things. But we do have both in different form, of course, in our mind. So there are rules and there are statistical information. And in the Chomskyan sense, this is the competence which is represented by rules. It is an abstract knowledge of the ideal speaker. And there is performance, which is a statistical knowledge on language use, how people use language, and therefore it can help accelerate the parsing process and so on. But it's nothing to do with the competence. And both are important. And if we put these things together, we can say that humans use both systems and computers use both systems. So statistics in the everyday use in computer science and in the human information processing as well. And there are rules when there is sparse data problem. Let's go back for these very old-fashioned rules, but we can use them. So sometimes it's useful if you are not able to cover with our statistical very fast system the existing linguistic construction. Let's try to analyze it, but we don't analyze what we know. So first we try to know something, and if we don't know it, we can go back and try to analyze and put the output in the memory, and that later it will be, again, a statistical information in our mind. And the how is another question. So the how is very important because everything has been modeled in the computer science so far sequentially. So just the only thing what we know that our description of languages which run in a computer are very, very sequential. Fast, but sequential. So just a very easy parallel. So the cathode ray tube screen, where it was just running, and for us, after, I don't know, 16 or 20 pictures per second, we could identify the picture as a moving film, and who cares whether it's not true. So if you would like to have a fast result, and we are not really interested in the human information processing, is good enough. But if we say that it is the model of the human information processing and computer, for many people not in this building now, tend to think that computer is the electronic brain and because of journalists, of course. But it's not true. It is totally different. We are just cheating when we say that these sequential algorithms are the human information processing algorithms. So it is the same with real pictures. So how the retina understands pictures is totally different from the very sequential algorithms. Perhaps you believe it to me, but if you go to Booth 24, my colleagues from the Pazman University show how a retina-based system sees the world. And it's exactly the same problem, of course, in the case of language problems and not the real world. And there are more and more ideas how to realize parallelism, and more hardware shows this trend that you will try quadshot and so on, tensor, even hundreds of cores are available, and these multi-core chips, Mixville, multi-threading, memory in chip, and so on and so on. So it is the hardware is coming to help us, because up to now it was just a dream, simulated parallelism, but today we are able to. So everything what I have touched so far comes here very important. Parallel methods in language processing is needed, and it has not been done so far. So it's totally missing from the language description. Everyone tries to describe language from left to right, or right to left, but sequentially. We don't know how the real linguistic system works. The only thing what we know about the human brain that it's difficult to understand, and that it does not work sequentially. And of course, it's very difficult to combine everything what I have told you now here with the brain research, but somehow we, language technology persons, can learn something from the brain researchers, how to catch the parallelism. And some neurological brain research applications can be combined with language technology words. So for example, here is the Human Brain Project. We are very glad that it's a flagship pilot action in this fat world. And language processing, all the points which are touched in the description of this pilot action should be expanded with language processing, how the brain works in general and how does it process languages. And these brain-related ICT development with language processing and informatics and language processing. So it is, of course, it's not omitted. I know that in general it's covered by the project, but it's never been described in this framework, I mean language processing technology. So these are just the main point of the Human Brain Project, and just wanted to stress that everything is ready to be combined. It doesn't mean that the results will be tomorrow, but we are able to show a lot of similar attempts in language description in the last few years. Word storage and memory, language understanding, metaphor understanding, natural language parsing with simulated neurons, syntactic structure building. So we are just trying to leave the old-fashioned sequential linguistic descriptions world. And there is a book, a recent book of Jerome Feldman, Neural Theory of Language. So it is in the air. And a very new project supported by the European Science Foundation, it just started yesterday, where neural linguists, psycholinguists, and computational linguists come together and try to solve the problem what I have sketched. So I promised, or at least there was a small question mark in the title of my presentation, that what is the future of HLT, human language technologies? So it's good news that the industry development, the hardware development, the language technology development, and the psycholinguistic, neurolinguistic developments show the same direction. And therefore, 2 years ago, a small workshop on language and mind in Prague said these very important things, that how the two things can be combined. Not much happened since then, but I think that I just stress that it's a very, very important thing, that future core technology is what I try to explain you in this presentation, and I'm just repeating what was said 2 years ago. And I hope that 2 years from now we can talk about the first results of a project which would be based on these ideas here. And always the presentations about language and language technology end with the Babel, picture of Babel, but it's a big problem to me because Babel is showing the problem itself. And I wanted to show how to come out from the world of problems. So I would like to offer another biblical picture instead. It is Pentecost, where those guys understood the same message in their own language. And it's much, much closer to our aims. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing your insights into human language technology and for some predictions that we will be able to follow up in the coming years. So, given that the time has progressed very much and we have a poster session coming up, I think we should maybe go for one or two short questions. Do we have a question from the floor?
be hanging around.
Okay, well, so
right.
So Gabor will be around, and so he will be. You can talk to him personally, if you like. So maybe in the Let's take that one question.
Yes. If one had an infinitely fast computer, so infinitely fast.
Yeah, okay.
Computing speed is absolutely no problem. Would the solutions that you advocate still exist? Would one still need to have a tremendous progress in the brain, understanding the function of the brain, and the infinitely fast computer would still not help?
I think that as the speed is not enough. So the speed is very important, and of course we are able to, I never try to think on an infinity, yeah. So it's a very, very, very fast computer. It would, how to say, simplify the situation, but the problem is that the method. So our computers today are much better than the computers, let's say, 20 years ago. And the same ideas we use, or the same ideas what we thrown out of the window 20 years ago, because that computer background did not help us, because it was too slow, too complicated. Today we have a lot of effective computers, a lot of memory and so on, and therefore the very primitive ideas we are able to use today, which were not good in the 60s and 70s, today the same ideas are good. So it is very important that the change in paradigm. So today I have heard it several times in the morning presentation about robots, and here in the previous presentation, that we have to model somehow the process itself and not the output. The output, so perhaps we are in this logarithmic scale, we are in this part, and I don't think that the development is very, very fast from now, because we are always collecting data using faster computers, but the paradigm is the same. So the speed is very important, but not enough.
Okay, so maybe we should close the session here so that you have a chance to look at the posters. Let us thank Gabor again for his fascinating presentation. And as I said, he will be around and you can talk to him personally. Thanks very much.